doing well, but Options is doing well within the course of what they're able to do for mental health services. Some of the things that are changed in the process, where everything was directed through the county once upon a time from the state, they actually have separate contracts for part of their funding that doesn't go through us anymore. So where we are a small portion, they also have separate contracts with All Care and Primary Health directly, so they bypass the county on some of these aspects. The county could still pull their contract and ask for it to go out on RFP with other people, but there's still issues of those contracts they have independently with the CCOs that has nothing to do with the county.
Is this a direct pass-through, or do we take a certain percentage off for going through the county?
Nothing. I don't think it was originally envisioned that way. I think the assumption at the time was that there was going to be 10% or so retention for ISF, but that is not how it played out.
It can be. It can be negotiated differently at some point, I guess, if we needed it to be. But the reality is we have no authority over Options. They have their own board of directors as a nonprofit agency that they answer to, and we don't have a seat on that board, even as a non-voting member from the county. And essentially, there is a citizen advisory group that is supposed to advise the commissioners on things related to mental health, and that we would negotiate with Options. And they respond to Options as well, their advisory with them. But the reality is other than us issuing a contract or not, they're a separate entity, and this is the amount of control that we have is this contract, whether we issue it or not.
Well, I just look at the fact that we've got our legal team has to go through all of this every other year, correct?
Yes.
And review it. We should be getting a little bit of something out of it, 2% or something. Covered. You know, I don't know if that can be, you say that could be negotiated into the contract?
I don't know if
next
this
time.
Contract.
Next time.
I think we might get a little bit because we were having to have one person take care of the mental health records that weren't transferred. We couldn't transfer those.
We are still maintaining some records, and there was a portion we're supposed to be paid for that.
Yeah, that's it. Yeah, get that. And when the mental health program was originally transferred over to Options, there were discussions about whether the county would remain the local mental health authority or whether we wanted to
create a mental health district.
Yeah, or give that, just say to the state, you contract directly with Options on this. We don't want to have anything to do with it. But at the time, the Board of Commissioners decided to retain the status of a local mental health authority so that if the county wanted, it could pull the programs back. Also because we were just starting the program and didn't know how it would work out with transferring the programs to Options and everything. So that it was floated around originally as to whether or not the county would have anything at all with mental health.
How many years has Options had?
10.
Yeah, 10, 12.
So are we satisfied with them? Can we now, on the next contract, transfer full authority to them and
be out of that business?
I'm not willing to abdicate our ability to change that authority, though it seems partially with the CCOs they've done that. But this is one of the things we were talking about at County College up in McMinnville not too long ago, that at some level, and the ORS, at least with the public health side, is we can't abdicate our public health authority. So abrogate, whatever the right word is supposed to be.
Give it up.
Yes. And at that thing, it's not that you just give up that you're the authority. Somebody else has to be designated as it, so they have a mental health district or they have something else that would be that authority.
Well, that would be right with that option, that they have their own board of directors and then their own entity.
We do have a mental health official. I can't remember exactly what the name is. That is required by statute, and that is either Carla McCafferty or somebody at Options that is appointed as the person.
As their director?
Well, it's like if they have to sign off on the mental health stuff like right away.
Yeah.
It's a acronym, and I can't remember what it
is. It's the director, and it is Carla. I mean, they have.
Yeah. It's,
yeah,
it
mental
has
health
to do
official,
with
something
with
like
the
that.
Real, like, quick sign off on somebody, and it's giving authority to one person. It always used to be the mental health director, but.
Mm-hmm. You have to have a bachelor's degree and some other things that there's some requirements by statute that they have in order to fulfill their duties.
Qualified,
I think,
something.
Yeah. Qualified mental health professional.
I guess my question would be, there's no accountability for the services provided if we give up the ability or our position as mental health authority. It's not that we necessarily have authority, but at least we are listened to. The state still contacts us and interviews us as part of that process. We still have the ability to influence some things, albeit it's not very easily, but you give that authority to them, then there's no accountability other than every 3 years they get an audit by the state. So the services they're providing in our community, that's just that. So if we want to give it away...
I mean, if they've been doing it for 10 years and we don't have any... we haven't had any issues pop up in 10 years.
That's not... I'm not saying that.
Okay.
I'm not saying that at all. And as somebody who's worked with that department thoroughly, there's a lot of things I think are issues. However, I don't necessarily think they're their fault. They're state issues that need to be changed legislation-wise. And, I mean, Oregon ranks near the bottom in mental health services nationwide. And we are not improving.
We're at the bottom of a lot of stuff nationwide.
It's one of those things that... I don't think it's something that we just knee-jerk in a random meeting say, let's just give up our mental health.
No, I'm just asking the question if that could happen. It's not. I'm not saying let's go do that. I'm not even advocating that. But I just wonder if that's a pathway at some point in time we want to take, especially if we're not getting anything from doing any part of it other than the fact that you know, do they ever come to us and say, okay, you guys are the governing body, so we have to ask you? No,
nope.
They just go on about their own.
They have their own board of directors for that.
So therein, I just want to know, I guess I can't even ask if it's from the liability standpoint. I'd just soon take us out of that gun sight.
And from the state standpoint, this was an opportunity for local control over something at some level. So if ever we did need to, we could technically say we no longer want to contract with them.
Okay. Just asking.
If you want to have a conversation about it.
No, I'm okay. Well, I just wanted to know how
it wouldn't be
out
today for the right conversation for that. That's something we would probably need to schedule. And and it's not a bad idea to have the justification of all that kind of stuff. But
have the board take a look at it again?
You could. It's...
No big hurry on it. But I'd like to have that conversation if we could.
And regarding the contract for them to continue as the mental health authority, do you have an opinion on whether this should move forward or not?
Let's see. This is just the grant agreement for funding, and the order appointing them as the mental health, or the order appointing the particular person as a qualified mental health professional, that was not ending. That's not it. Part of this grant agreement. This is just grant agreement for them to provide services. It's a subcontract. It's a provider contract.
So we've already entered into the contract with the state, right?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. So we're passing through a grant to them.
Right.
Any issues
that's
with that going forward?
Yeah, no problem with that. Anything we're going to do on this, you know, looking at this thing can affect this year's anyway, so, you know, we got 2 years to look at it again. And that's, you know, I mean, I'm not saying, gee, let's get in here next Tuesday because we're going to change it because I don't think we can change it now anyway. And if we don't have any real outstanding issues with this IGA, I'd say go for it. Hmm. You need a motion to do so?
No, I was just looking at the notices that they're sending in the assignment with the Board of Commissioners. It's not as chair as the Board of Commissioners. It's just assignment of the Board of Commissioners. And then Carla as the Executive Director. But on the signature page, it's all three of us. So
I think we're looking at it to go in next week's business session.
Mm-hmm.
That's fine.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. It's a renewal of something that's already... Do we need? Can it go on consent, or does it need to have admin? I mean, on the app. That would be awesome. Okay, it looks like the next three are Julie. With unsafe structure ordinance.
These were discussed by the board yesterday, but it's on here again. I'm not quite sure if people had a question or not, but for the unsafe structure ordinance, the board, my understanding was, had approved it moving forward. There was just a question on the unsafe structure. There was a concern about the building official having the ability to tell somebody they have to tear a building down. So we added language that just said that unsafe structures shall be taken down and removed only upon order of the Board of Commissioners.
That's on an individual basis.
Yeah, so instead of Mark having the authority to go out there and tell them it's unsafe, they have to remove the home, we're saying that it has to come from the board. That directive to remove, tell somebody they have to take their building down, they have to come from the Board of Commissioners. So this is just the amendment.
What is the process for that? Would we go out and physically take a look at it and say, or do we
report
on it?
Here's one for you. We would basically have to come and explain to you, and we bring the sheriff or Department of Health or whatever agency is involved in it, so that we know, so you have the full story of what's going on there. So the determination then is made by the board instead of one employee. Because my understanding is that was the concern when we talked about it yesterday.
Okay. Yeah. It's not that they won't,
it's just that a vacant structure that is not secured against entry shall be deemed unsafe. Where's the definition of vacant?
Okay, you're not going to find it in here. So what happens is there's a national code and there's a state code. The national code, this is the language out of that national code. And then in Oregon, it's up to counties whether they want to adopt this or not. So I don't think you were there when we were discussing it, Lily, but there was, Jackson is like really strict. So is City of Grants Pass. Like in the City of Grants Pass, if your eavesdrop isn't correct, you can deem it an unsafe structure and have it removed.
So I didn't. Crazy. But my question wasn't what makes it unsafe. My question is what makes it vacant? What's the definition of vacant?
I do not know if Mark's code has definition of vacant, but we would just rely on, is it Black's?
Yeah. Well, I just got this to look at just like while we were on at conference, and I just took a glance at this. And I got some concerns because of the notice and the opportunity to be heard requirements before anything's closed up or taken down or something like that. I did some really quick checking, and the City of St. Helens and Clackamas County have both adopted an ordinance on the abatement of unsafe structures, and it has very specific procedures. This is the notice that will go out. This is what it'll look like. This is, they have an opportunity to contest it by doing this or that. And it just sets out the very specific guidelines. It's kind of long, but there won't be any guessing as to who gets what notice and how much time do they have to fix it, or do they have time to fix it, and what if we think their building is vacant but it's not, and you know, there's just the requirement of notice and opportunity to be heard. We got the notice requirement in here, but we don't have the opportunity to be heard before it's taken down or something. And we, our office, we're kind of confused because we usually don't do anything until the board directs us to do something on ordinances, and so it kind of.
So what happened in this case is we, like these other ones, we sent them to legal February or March maybe, didn't hear back from them, so I talked to the liaison, and he said bring it to the board for a workshop, which we did, and then from there it typically would go to legal and they would do fine-tune it and they'd put it, they do the prepare for that first reading and second reading. So that's what we did. And then I just found out now that there's a concern with it. So I was not made aware of those concerns before. But so this was when we went through that process. We went to the workshop, and then the board said, yeah, we have this one concern here, but let's send it over to legal and get this ready for the first reading.
Okay, legal, this is legal's opportunity to chime in and see the things that.
I would rather have legal have time to actually weigh in and give us some feedback on it, not just in a meeting on admin that's supposed to set what's the agenda for next week.
Well, and that's why when the board voted on it, they said to send it to legal to review it and prepare it for the first reading.
Okay. I'm not sure why it's here today then.
I thought, I don't know, somehow I got the impression that Julie had requested it, and maybe I misinterpreted that it was supposed to come under this meeting. It sounds like it went on yesterday's meeting, and so now it's here today.
Yeah, it was on yesterday's meeting. I think it was just some confusion.
Yeah.
But I'm glad that we're talking.
Yeah, we're not sure what we're
doing. And I'm glad we're talking about it, though, because obviously there's a concern that we hadn't known about. So
I think the missing link is that we weren't involved when it went to the board, so we didn't know the board, I think, unless you sent us something saying, oh, yeah, the board approved moving forward with this.
But they didn't approve going forward with it. They said they approved going to legal for review.
Okay.
Yeah. So if you're just getting it, I think you need ample time to...
We've had it. We're not just getting it.
Right.
But we haven't had time to really look at it.
In all blunt reality, it's going to be a while before we get to it, okay? I wish I could say this is going to be top of the priority list. It's as high on the priority list as we can put it, but I have to tell you, this is...
Well, I know that, you know, unsafe structures and things, because we have the feline house out there, this is what sparked this whole thing, is what do we have in our bag of tricks that says, hey, ma'am, you can't go back into that house? Mm. Because it is unsafe, period. Mm-hmm. That's the end of that. I think that's what our intent was. But then if there's an opportunity to put more into it than just that, then we need to look at that. And I think that's what we're doing. You answered the call as to how do we just keep a person, they say, hey, you can't do that, and that's what this is, fire hazard, inadequate light, so on. And health, human life and public welfare, all of these things are in there addressed at that one instance, but then we're saying, like, you bring up a good point, what's vacant? So is a house that we would define as vacant, be it there's squatters in there, then it's not vacant anymore, correct? Is that your concern?
That, or is it an outbuilding that's deemed vacant? I mean, that was part of a wording, is a vacant structure. That doesn't mean it's a house. So just a vacant structure means it's deemed unsafe.
Could be a woodshed. Could be a barn.
Could be a business. It could be...
I'd want to check and see what Mark has first in the building code, in the national code, because it might already be defined. And we would want to, I would think, default back to those national codes. They're international codes, actually.
Didn't we already at some point adopt the state building?
Mm-hmm. I thought we had, too. Yeah.
Yes.
Because it is state law, and we have to follow that.
Right, and in the state building safety codes, they say this is one that you have the option.
Okay.
If a county wants it, they do it individually. So this isn't one that's part of the state code. It just says, so this doesn't exist in state code. It says this is up to a county if they want to adopt it.
Okay.
I would just like something that, you know, that when we run into a situation like that, it's pretty straightforward, and it isn't as broad-based as it should be. Maybe it should be. You know, if we can keep it broad-based and simple, but I think you mentioned, Lee, that if we took on Clackamas's, they held the deal where they go, whoops, now it's 42 pages long. I'm not interested in that. I think we need something that if our enforcement people can walk out and say, here it is. Mm-hmm. This is what the board has adopted, and you follow under 15.15.025 unsafe conditions. But I see that definitions might be a category we want to add.
There's some good models out there that we can work off of.
To define structure, define vacant, define...
Yeah, that...
That may clarify some of it.
I think it's the International Code on the Abatement of Dangerous Buildings or something. I think that's what it's called. It does have definitions of what a dangerous building is and several other things that it might have. I could get you a copy of that. And it might be something that we can just kind of add some things in there or trim it down or something.
Yeah, you know, when this first came to the board, I wish we had known those concerns because then we could have addressed them.
Sure, I
know Simon had a...
We were clear on our intent and we weren't.
Yeah, Simon had a question on the term insanitary that's being used in there, because when I first read it to him, I'm like, what is that? You know. But it is an actual term that's in that national code, and it does refer, and I think I copied you on the email, that it does refer to like an infested, something, whereas unsanitary means it's just not clean. Insanitary means there's an infestation involved, and it is a threat to health and safety. So, and that's defined in that national code. So I'm thinking
it can't
be
corrected.
International.
And maybe it can't be corrected?
Sometimes not, and you have to come down. I would have to say the woman's house with the cats was probably insanitary.
I would too, but I'm not the judge of that.
Is that the trailer case?
Yes.
Yeah. I know. That one is a little bit of a different scenario in that you also, if you want to move a trailer from a trailer park, have another step of bureaucracy to navigate down at the assessor's office. Maybe that's not the best example. But a house, I can see where you're going with that, yeah. Yeah.
I didn't think but that's maybe not the best. One that you could unhook it and tow it away.
Yeah, so I know when, and as the discussion around this sort of topic kind of broadens, then we'll probably find a better example case than the one with the cats, okay. Is my suggestion. Because that's a little bit of a unique, yeah.
And maybe that can come up in the definitions, you know, the difference between the two. You know, the structure is actually something that is permanent.
Yeah, my understanding is that road was not.
You're saying there's different rules involving the manufactured housing industry where they can put the axles under and haul it away?
Yeah. In terms of putting the axles under it and hauling it away, sure. Yeah, the assessor has to get involved at that point for, logical reasons. I mean, in terms of the taxation, is there tax owing on it? And then, you know, of course, a lot of those are on manufactured home parks, and so there's a whole layer of landlord-tenant type of relationships that go on there. And
even when they're not in parks, there are.
Yeah, exactly.
I had a relative that, a renter rented a house, and they brought in a mobile onto the property without her permission. They had to evict the renter from the home and now are stuck with this mobile, and they couldn't just move it. They had to go through the assessor's office because there was taxes owed on it, even though it wasn't there legally in the first place or with her permission. It was a whole mess.
Kind of a tangent. I probably shouldn't have taken us down that tangent, but when we get back to this topic, which will be as soon as absolutely possible, I pledge.
Okay.
Soon is not going to be version of soon as we're sitting around the table. Totally recognize and sympathize on that, but we'll come up with some better.
Just to clarify as to why this is even here is apart from, we're going to have this again and again,
sure.
Especially with the meth houses and things of that sort.
Yeah.
Yeah, we had one last week where we went out with the sheriff's department. Last week or 2 weeks ago, went out with the sheriff's department, and it's one that we wish we had had this ordinance on.
Dim Murray, probably.
Let's not maybe talk about things that should be in executive session or might come to a hearing on us. I only say that, I mean, you guys can touch base later off the record, but for the record, we shouldn't have that conversation. And I guess my concern with having a vacant structure defined is, in my terminology of vacant, is whether it's occupied or not. Well, how does an outbuilding be vacant or not? Because it's not necessarily a living structure. So when is that vacant? Is it because the house is vacant? Or is the building still deemed unsafe? So to me, it's just not clear. And I would also want to make sure that you guys have a chance to weigh in on the right to appear kind of options or the mitigation with that. So I would like to see go forward. I guess for us, I know we've talked in the past about not knowing what the prioritization of what other stuff you guys have going on, and it's hard to know. Do we not put things through to you? Do we wait? Is there other things we'd say, well, we'd rather this be a priority of those? It's one of those things that it's hard to know because we don't have those.
Yeah. Yeah.
That information of what you're working on or what the prioritization is already there.
The cases that the board has already decided to advance with in terms of the nuisance cases, that's what I perceive as being the priority.
Well, health and safety, absolutely. But if an ordinance needs to move forward that would actually help with health and safety, that potentially could be there as well. So,
yes.
I'm not saying it's ready to move forward. I don't think it is ready for our weekly business session yet, next week. But
I think you took action already on it to Sunday.
Well, if it's
it wouldn't have been appropriate for them to do that in a general discussion meeting in the middle of the week. That's what admin meetings are for.
And it's an ordinance, so it needs attending. It's
Oh yeah, it's going to have to go through that whole. It has to go through that whole legal publication, first reading, second reading. All
and it's
of
really
that.
Not in the form right now. We'd have to do something. We could attach it and do one of those sorts.
Yeah, yeah. I'll
formatting
send you the,
is just.
I'll send you the original emails, maybe on it, or the initial versions of the stuff that
okay.
I had questions on.
Yeah.
There was also at one time something in there about that appeal period, Leah. So I'll see if I can
okay.
find that and send that back.
Okay. I'll get you that abatement code, and maybe there's just some things in there that can be put in
okay.
or something. I don't know. We can okay. squish it together or something.
So you have directed?
Yes. I think so.
Yeah.
I would wonder what does existing equipment mean?
I've asked Mark that too.
Yeah.
And he even went back to the national code to try and get a definition. They don't define it, but what it's meant for is, for example, like if there's a rock crusher out there and the landowner is just leaving it there and you've got kids playing on it and sharp edges and
yeah.
kids are getting tetanus or whatever, that's the type of equipment it's meant to serve. Because I asked him, I said, I'd like, when we first did it, I said, what does that mean? You know,
but then you might have other issues, almost like the mobile homes, because they're all licensed, right? These bigger pieces of equipment.
It depends. You know, like a farm equipment, they don't have to be. Like farm equipment is exempt from some of the rules that somebody else might have to follow.
I
like farm equipment,
to
a 13-year-old
that.
Kid can drive a farm tractor down the road.
Yeah,
you know,
and they should, because it's fun.
I'm just thinking that would be a good one.
Yeah, that one
find.
Was one that has bothered us. So. Okay, so then there's the RLDC definition. These were ones that the board...
Hold
I
on.
Want.
Oh, yeah. So the next item, the RLDC definitions. Okay, go ahead.
So this is one that the board decided to move forward now with legal to. So the next step for the board, of course, after legal looks at it, is to... have the person sitting reading on it. So these were ones that were drafted last August, and then went to public hearing in October, January, and again in early February. And I know Beecher was doing some work on looking at these, and I don't know where he's at on them, but this is one that the board agreed looked good enough to move forward. I think there were no further questions. As you remember, originally there was a question on camping. Dan, you had one on junk, and I emailed you about that. So this is it.
Are all of these somewhere already in the code?
They're in the amendments or in the code? Or lacking in the code? For example.
You've seen it somewhere and you know these. Actually have a definition.
Yeah, for example, camping
mm-hmm.
is not even defined. We regulate
yeah.
camping, but we don't define
mm-hmm.
camping. We have junkyards, but we don't define junk.
Okay.
We have a department, but we don't say what the department is. The effective odor control system comes through with those proposed marijuana rules. That one's in waiting for... coming up in the hopper. It's again, that comes from those ones that were proposed last October that went through the board in January and February, and they're in the next set. So marijuana, of course, we mentioned in our amendments that just were adopted, but we don't have them defined. OLCC is, I mean, it's just basically stuff that either is lacking or is part of the amendments that either came. I think that was the question with either Beecher or you, Pat, I can't remember, but do you put the definitions in if we haven't gotten to, for example, effective odor control system? Although we heard the public hearings on the odor issue, and that's next in the hopper after definitions. So let me back up. So the directive was, let's take this first set chunk, which was fences, and do that first. Then let's do definitions, and then let's do the odor, noise, dust, etc. So these are just being presented to you in the order that I was instructed to.
Yeah, the question that I had, though, was when we did the fences, so the
mm-hmm.
one we just got done with, and it was going to be backwards if we didn't define those within.
Well,
that.
I agree.
Yeah, so that's why we
so
did
effective
it.
Order control mechanically generated is the next set,
yeah.
But I was instructed that definitions were next, so that's why
okay.
they're here. Mm-hmm. To me, it makes perfect sense that we do those when we do the other part.
Why are we doing them separately than the other part? I guess is I wouldn't want to go through a whole 90-day ordinance process just for definitions.
That's why I wonder, because if you what if when you start to write the other part, as you say,
it's already written,
you decide we should have really changed that definition.
Okay. So the reason why, Lily, is because the board said to do it. The board said to break it into four and bring them. So we had the hearings, and you guys discussed it, and then. You said it's too much at once as a board, so you said break it into chunks, bring us this chunk first, this chunk next.
It doesn't mean we go forward with them in an ordinance in those chunks. It may be just, let's look at this one, okay, let's look at your... I don't know. It was February and we just started, but this is a waste of all of our time to do this without an ordinance. So we need to add the other ordinance to it because it is a long process to get this going just for definitions.
I don't disagree.
And then maybe by the final one, if there are some that are, like you say, already in the code but never been, like camping, then you throw that in. I don't know.
Yeah, it's...
I know what the definition of why we're trying to define these, because we're having all of the... Basically, the people just squatting on properties in the...
Yeah.
Whatever you call the compounds. But at the same time... having two hearings to do definitions when we're going to turn around and do two hearings to do the rules for these definitions, to me it would be more efficient to do them together, would it not?
I totally agree with you.
So what the main thing is that we're going to look at these in chunks. We're going to look at them in four segments, but we're not. Then we're going to put them all in one order?
I don't remember ever anything about a four. I remember we wanted Williams Citizens Advisory separate. And the other ordinance we said split in two. I don't.
And then one chunk you sent, you said reserve for a future cannabis committee. So there's five. There's that fences that we just went through. There's the definitions. There's the Williams one, which the board said don't do now. There's the citation ordinance part of it, which you guys did want. If you remember, you wanted that separate because of controversy. And then there's the noise and setbacks that you wanted to go to a cannabis committee.
So why are we doing this?
Because this was the second one that you said to bring forward.
But it's not attached to those ones you just said.
Okay, they were all one. They were all part of the public hearing in October, and then they were all part of the public hearing in January and February. And at the end of that February meeting, the board gave the direction, this is too much, break it into chunks, and let's do them... a chunk at a time.
So what part of any of the whole deals with camping? Is there any restrictions on camping or?
Our code does address camping. It's not defined.
Okay, so we're just trying to add definitions.
These were definitions when we were, again, that's why it was all presented as a big chunk, because they all play together. And in my mind, they should have all come forward together. But that's not what we were told to do. So these
to me, the citation one, there's a reason why I don't think the citation process works. It adds a layer of bureaucracy that's ignored, and there's no enforcement through our... We still have to go through the courts either way. So to me, that's why citations comes out. The William overlay, that's a separate issue that comes out that doesn't really deal with the whole bigger issue. The rest of it, to me, was one thing, that we had the controversial and the non-controversial. So...
Yep. Well, this is just what you... decided in February. It's too late to add it to what we just adopted.
I agree. So I'm trying to figure out what else is left, just the stuff to go to the Cannabis Advisory Committee?
What's left was the Williams CAC, which we said we're not doing.
We're researching that piece. I mean,
well, the piece is that they're supposedly going to the voters, and the commissioner said wait for them to go to the voters. That's what they said in the meeting last week.
Yeah, we're researching that right now.
Which is exactly what we're researching right now.
Okay. So, and then the citation piece.
Which I wasn't aware of, so I don't know what you're researching on that, because I was instructed to let them know that we're not going to process it until after their election.
We're researching it actually for the county clerk.
Okay, because I knew she was involved too.
Clerk. They ask questions of the clerk.
Yeah, because, but anyways,
not
that's
to
why
do.
I think for whatever reason they were broken into chunks, but yeah, it would have been nice if this could have just been included in the last batch. And now that what's left is, okay, so William CAC is on hold. Citation was very controversial, so of course the board wanted a separate hearing on that. Then there's the stuff that goes to the cannabis committee, and if it comes out of there, it'll go to first and second reading after board review, too. So this is the only other one that's hanging out there right now.
But it isn't anything. It's just definitions. So why are we defining something that's not attached to something else?
Because we just adopted some codes that are effective October 30th. Those are fences. Those do contain the word marijuana.
So we probably should have put marijuana in that one we just adopted.
Probably put a junk, because junk was part of the fences.
Junk was part of the fences because we didn't want them using old car bodies. And
I understand, but
appliances.
But there was definitions in what we just passed. So definitions in what we should just pass should have been included or attached to whatever else is coming, just to pass it.
The definitions that you just incorporated and adopted were added after the hearings as a concern from the commissioners. That's why they were in the last batch. Fence, defining fence. That came up throughout the process this spring. Mm-hmm. That's why it was added to that one, because you were dealing with that chunk of it.
So I think it would be interesting to know which of these are already in the code and which are not.
Well, you can tell by looking at it. So the first one, junkyard, is already in the... Oh, I understand what you're saying.
Yeah, yeah. It's used somewhere in
there. Yeah, junkyard is used, camping is used, and then camping includes the words camping party and camping unit, so you have to add those when you're defining the camping. Department is used in the code. Junk is used in the code. Marijuana will be as of October 30th because we just passed it. OLCC is... the producer and processor are in there, but not very clear. So they were a better definition that came out of that. So really the next batch, which would be what goes to the committee, is effective odor control system and mechanically generated noise. Everything else should already, in my opinion, be.
Can I ask where the 30-day camping limit comes from?
State.
Because 2 weeks establishes tenant rights.
ORS, and I don't have that file on here, but the state says that you're limited to 30 days in certain zones. So like farm and forest, agricultural, those are all 30-day limits.
But this says rear yard of a resident single-family dwelling lot. Aren't those aren't deemed
camping?
Well,
I understand what you're saying on that one. Okay.
I guess for me, it's 2 weeks established tenant rights where you actually have to have somebody evicted off of your property. And yet we're saying that it's not camping as long as it's up to 30 days. Now we've allowed somebody to camp on someone's property and they actually have to be evicted because we allow them to camp for 30 days.
Well, we'll look at it this way. So you have somebody, your kids want to go, it's too hot in the house, they want to camp out summer, month of July. Is that camping?
No,
I would say
it's
not.
Me and my
so
residents sleeping
sure
outside.
Dry.
I don't think it has to. Oh, all right. So the reality is though, at 14 days, anything over 14 days establishes residency.
That I don't know.
So we want to make sure that we don't inadvertently give residency status to someone who's camping and now has to go through an eviction process to be removed from the property because we allow them to be, BLM has a 14-day camping limit. Mm-hmm. So if residency is established on the 15th day, we don't want to allow camping more than 14 days. Otherwise, we have now allowed residency and it requires eviction to get them off.
We also have a section of the code that talks about how they cannot be used for dwellings as dwellings. So that's a legal question, but I would say that combats that argument that it's not established tenancy.
I just don't want a conflict with state law where residency is established over 14 days. And we have homeless that go into vacant homes and stay for 15 days, and they now have tenant rights and have to be evicted out of those vacant homes. We can have somebody come in the compound and sleep in a tent and say, I've lived here for 2 months. It's my house. It's my property. So I just want to make sure that we're consistent with state law.
Well, state law also says, so if they're claiming that's their home, state law also says one home per lot in the state of Oregon.
I'm just saying, it's the only time I've ever seen camping limited to 30 days. Everything else I've ever seen is 14 days. So that's why I was wondering where
yeah,
it came from.
And
matter of fact, our county parks, we kick people out after 2 weeks because they can establish residency in our county parks and the camping places. So we limit people to 2 weeks in our county parks.
So in the state law that covers land use, it exempts the parks like that. So we look at those totally separate. We wouldn't be involved. We wouldn't even be telling Sarah what to do with her campground.
I'm not saying. But the reason why our parks does it is because it establishes residency.
But then you also have other parts of the state law that says you can camp up to 30 days.
I don't know. I just think that...
I think we're following what your concern is. I think we can find a way to accommodate
I think
that.
We ought to err on the shorter side of it. Even if state law says 30 days, I think I'd rather err on the 14 days and say, okay, it's 14 days in Josephine County. And if they say, oh, well, no, state law says I can camp here, then that's an argument for a different day. But if they get past the 14 days, then they said, well, I live here. It's my residency, and we actually have to go through an eviction process. It's even more time keeping more people busy. But if we just leave it at 14, then what you're saying, leave it at 14, that's what BLM and our park service that everybody uses for consistency, I would say leave it at 14.
Well, and I would just ask legal to look at it to make sure that we're not in a place where we're conflicting with other...
We can do some checking. I know I did some research on this before, but I can't remember off the top of my head what the answer is, but I can do some checking on that.
Here again,
where is our enforcement? I mean, we're talking about...
That's what I wanted to bring up. You know, so if you change it to 14 days, first of all, I think that has to go to a whole brand new hearing because that's a very, very controversial change. You're looking at state law that says 30. So we have people that are out there 45 days and we're already trying to enforce them. Now we're going to start tracking them at 14 days?
We can't. I don't even know if we can track them 14 days even. But I see where yours is coming from.
She's looking at one part of the state code, but there's also other parts of state code that...
I just want to make sure that we're not inadvertently giving somebody rights to be on a property that is the intent of us even defining is to limit somebody's ability to access an area. So we don't want to inadvertently give another protection in place. I'm just asking that we're consistent, knowing that our county parks protects at 14 days. BLM limits to 14 days, and those are all camping definitions. I understand the why. We don't want people camping out on properties.
I don't know if there's a way to make the prohibitions part of the zone, like it says resource zone. I don't know if we could add something to the resource zone codes that we don't have the prohibitions and the definitions.
Okay, I agree with you 1,000%, Leah. So when this was brought forward in October, at first there were specific camping standards proposed. Mm-hmm. And that's when DLCD said, do you know it's 30 days in these zones? And nobody in the office had known that. So when it went to hearing, I told them I am pulling the camping out of the regs, like Leah's saying. I'm pulling that out and we'll bring that forward when I bring forward housing amendments. And then I had shared that with the board as well in January. So then because the way the code is written, a lot of the rules are incorporated into the definitions, and that's not the right way to do things. If you have camping standards, there should be a section in your code, section 15, whatever, that says camping. And then all the rules are there. Camping in a resource zone is limited to 30 days. Camping in rural residential is limited to 120 days. Mm-hmm. So we need that, and that's coming. We know that's coming. But right now we have stuff in the code that's not defined. So, mm-hmm. So how do you enforce something that's not defined?
Okay, how do we get the definitions into the code? Well, we have a couple of projects in the pipeline, believe it or not. I have not told Julie about this, so she's totally unprepared. But we do have the hearings officer ordinance that the prior board knows abundantly about. And you remember the hearings officer ordinance? Okay. And so I have taken a long time to produce that, which I readily admit to. But anyway, I think it's about ready to be presented to you. Actually, it's already gone to you. It went to... And now it's ready to go to the Planning Commission. So there's basically what it's saying is that there is a hearings officer already provided for in the Rural Land Development Code. And that's a really important point, so I'm going to reiterate it. There's already a hearings officer in the Rural Land Development Code that can hear land use cases the way
which
the board
does. Which is a state
law, right,
which we can't undo.
Yeah, you can, but it was deemed through the judgment of your predecessors. Anyway, that those decisions can lawfully go to LUBA directly upon appeal if you change that provision of the RLDC. In other words, someone goes to planning director and gets a decision they don't like, right? Now, currently, they can go to a hearings officer. But if they go to the hearings officer and they don't like the hearings officer's decision, the only recourse is to go to the board. And so nobody goes to the hearings officer because it's just another layer of expense. They just skip that. Well, if you decide to change that, this is what the ordinance would accomplish. You can send the decision from the hearings officer to LUBA, and thereby the board would not be caught in the middle, except during certain circumstances that require the board to be making decisions. We can have a whole other meeting on this. I bring it up because there's that ordinance coming through the pipeline. I think that's fairly near term. You're not going to have to make a decision on it for a while, but it's going to the Planning Commission. And they can make recommendations. Number two is that, yes, my understanding is that has the board done the marijuana RR5 yet?
Where? That one goes to public hearing on August 28th.
Right. Okay, so you sent, the board sent to the Planning Commission, or the director, that application to initiate,
yeah, that's
order
already
to initiate
done.
Application. Okay, so that's coming down as well. Do you know the one I mean? It's going to prohibit marijuana production,
of
prohibited marijuana.
That's actually what my question for you earlier today was based on.
Okay, so there, that one, from what I understand, is destined for the Planning Commission on or about August 28th, right? And so I don't know what that's going to look like. Probably none of us do because the Planning Commission is going to weigh in on it.
Right.
See, I'm trying to get caught up on the situation myself. But there may be an opportunity to incorporate the definitions into one of those two, probably the latter, and we might get to the same place in terms of
that would,
amending the
so
RLDC.
So it's attached to something that it's not just having the process for definitions.
Yeah.
The other piece is we have a Planning Commission member.
Yes, I saw that.
Submitting stuff than something they're about to hear.
I think we'll bring that back another... let's bring that back in another.
Okay.
Yeah, that's probably appropriate for a separate agenda item.
But I want to make sure that you guys are both included.
Yeah, I do.
Okay, because it's also now been sent via email to all of us, each directly. Haven't read it intentionally to try to keep the process. But I just want to make sure that you're aware.
Thank you. All right, I don't know. That's the idea of the moment.
You know, Wally, that works fine too because this has all already technically been through all those hearings, so we can just bring it through the first and second reading with the next.
Maybe
the
marijuana.
Which hearings are you talking about? Were they in front of the Planning Commission?
The definitions.
Mm-hmm.
They went through the Planning Commission on October.
That was
October,
the Planning Commission.
And then they went to the board in January. Board had a public hearing in January.
And those are the ones we're not doing any longer, as we go forward on the new ordinances.
I don't think we should. I mean, I understand why it was done that way. I think it's because it was such a controversial subject. Maybe we.
I don't know why it went that way, but
yeah, me either.
Anyway. So anyway,
well,
so
I did.
October
so
was the
moving
planning
on.
Commission.
Yeah,
we are now with the other one.
It was October 31st.
All right.
Is any part of this? Never mind. So the next thing is rural road numbering ordinance.
Okay, so that's
which
one.
For some reason, I'm trying to figure out what page 21 is that's getting skipped.
So,
proposed text amendments to Josephine County, Oregon Rural and Development Code to address growing OLCC regulated marijuana on rural residential lands, submitted to the Planning Commission August 28th, and the public hearing is August 28th. So why is this in here?
Well, I don't see that on the agenda.
It's in our packet. I'm looking at our packet. So right after the unsafe structure ordinance,
separate file.
Page 20 says RLDC definitions.
Anyway.
Move forward for the first meeting, this meeting to finalize a draft for the first reading, and the next thing is the ordinance for the 28th. So what says RLDC definitions is not this. It's something else in here that is completely different definitions than this. Let me flip this around. So under that title, page 20, this is the definitions included. It says it's a hearing going before the planning on the 28th.
I don't know why you'd have that. I'm guessing it's a mistake.
But this is the evidence attached to that, and it says for first reading. So I can pass this over if you need to see it more, but
I don't know why you would have that.
Okay, it is what our packet shows that we're supposed to be discussing right now.
Oh, first reading of which one?
That's not, so I believe she is looking at what goes to public hearing on August 28th.
Correct, and this is what is the evidence with the face page of the RLDC definitions move forward to first reading.
You'd have to ask people.
This is the RR5 restrictions moving forward to the Planning Commission. It's in our packet.
I'm guessing that's an error somehow. You know, I recommend we just stick with the agenda. I think somehow it's
linked in here as part of the same agenda is what I'm saying, is where the face page says definitions. This is the next page that shows what definitions we're looking at. So that's why I'm saying
Yeah.
And then it goes into unsafe structures and equipment right after it.
So when
on the staff summary? Is that what you're looking at?
Yeah.
So it doesn't actually get to something else. I'm just looking at what is in our packet, and it's just... okay. Well, I have questions about the other one that's going to the Planning Commission anyhow, but I can ask you about that later. I'm just going through my stuff.
Yeah, I don't put them together, so I don't know.
How much later? Because my understanding is that the notice has to go out on that.
Oh, she sent it. She sent it.
Okay.
Well, I mean, she could pull it still, but it is sent out to be published on the 13th.
Is there anything that would allow requiring home occupied use for any commercial operation on rural residential property?
Okay, so we talked about this once before.
It's required for any business outside of agricultural.
Okay, so you can't have marijuana in your home. So how do you regulate it as a home occupation? You know, so when I first started, we went through that whole gamut.
Anything that happens on rural residential property is under your home.
Not by code.
So that's what I'm asking, is why does anybody else get to have a home occupied, whether it be in their garage, their shop, their shed, anything else on their property? If it's in rural residential, they're required to have a home occupation permit to have commercial operation on rural residential land.
Okay, so I think this should be a separate agenda item, Commissioner, because we already went through this. There's some data I can get back to you and send to you, but that's a very long discussion. I can sit here and try and figure out, I can pull the code out and start working through the process again, but there's a couple things. The state doesn't allow you to grow marijuana in your home, okay? There's home business, there's home occupation. Let me pull up the order here. I really hesitate since this isn't on the agenda.
I know.
It technically was in our packet. That
True.
Has been sent is technically here on the agenda.
Can I see where you're looking at? You have that one.
It fell under definitions.
See, I don't know why you'd even have that cover thing in there, because that's not what I submit for this.
Here's page 20, that cover page, and it says definitions, and it was signed off by legal. Now, if you go to page 21, it is the RR5, and then it's followed by unsafe structure ordinances. So it's in there twice.
Mm-hmm. I lost it.
Here's a mouse. Thank you. I think part of this would be a really easy thing. If agricultural is left to EFU, and if any business on a rural residential requires a permit for a business, it would save a lot of effort regarding any specific topic.
I've wondered about that too. Not with Julie.
Yeah.
I mean, yes, that's been a discussion.
This simplifies
that even
everything.
Precedes
it's
today.
Not a topic of any individual business. It's just purely residential's residential. If you want to have a business on residential, you have to have a permit.
You guys,
we haven't talked about this, so she's, flat-footed.
Yeah, I'm really concerned knowing that we're probably going to get a lawsuit out of whatever we do that we don't discuss it if it's not on an agenda.
Okay, that hasn't been said, so.
I'm just going off of what's been presented to me that's in my packet that's on the agenda today. So that's all I'm saying is.
I thought today was when we were going to talk about it. And then it was last week as we were out, we were trying to figure out what was supposed to go on the agenda. Anyway, point is,
and it doesn't have to go on the 28th if we need a pull.
That's what I'm saying.
Do it
so,
right.
But we need to get the commissioner's level of comfort with it going forward on the 28th, like, unfortunately, like today, because I think the train's about to move out of the station. So,
the board did approve it to go.
This
that's
is kind
why
of the
noise
last.
Went.
That doesn't mean we can't turn around and vote to say we
right.
want to wait before we've had the hearing. So, I'm just saying that I think we're. Can't
if you're
look
not comfortable
at
with it going out, today's the day to say let's hold off. Or if you want to see how it plays out, then I mean, you get what I'm saying? This is.
So I point out at the end of August, we try and get our dates consistent with OLCC so the growers aren't having to deal with multiple timelines.
And I don't think we have to have anything to do with growers if you make it a simple ordinance that says any commercial operation on a rural residential in any capacity, it doesn't have to limit to one market. Any business on rural residential requires permitting. And that home occupancy permitting right now requires traffic requirements and impact on the neighbors and impact on the other neighbors. I mean, any other business in rural residential requires a process. Why is it not that way for these types of businesses on rural residential?
Well, at the current time, agricultural is a permitted use. So if they're growing agriculture, they can just do it. I don't know at what point.
I'm not saying they can't grow. I'm saying commercial. They're having a business that they're making a profit on that has nothing to do with agriculture. It has to do with its being a business on residential property.
I'll email the earlier correspondence on that to everyone.
Is growing, it's an agricultural crop. Is that considered, if you're growing an agricultural crop for sale, is that considered a business?
If you're selling anything, it's a business.
Because I think, isn't there something in there about, like, say, for instance, growing 5 acres of corn and taking it to the grower's market? That's considered a business, correct? No, because it's ag.
I really would prefer to see this as a separate agenda item, you guys. I mean, we're going down a slippery slope right now.
Well, then that's easy. My vote would be we stop the process and we look at this before we go down a whole hearings process, going down something that doesn't get us to the solution that would make sense.
So what we discussed, early on, I remember, Lily, you had questions about the home occupation when you first started, and I sent an email. I'll find that and I'll resend all that out. Why it doesn't qualify for that. I don't remember all the details off the top of my head, but it's all in writing, so I'll find that and get that out to the group. Then there are things that we have talked about at our meeting and things I've talked about with my liaison about the fact that commercial agricultural enterprise is not permitted in the RR zones, and therefore, why can't we say if it's... making a profit, we just don't allow it in the commercial agricultural zones, because technically we could. The amendments clarify that a commercial agricultural enterprise is not allowed in RR. That's in that packet that goes on August 28th. The other thing is processing. If you are growing anything for the purpose of processing, a technical reading of the code would say you cannot do it. So these amendments also clarify that in very simple terms what that intent is, which means if you're a marijuana, and then the state DLCD has a section there, they question whether you can even have medical marijuana on in a rural residential zone. because technically, when you allow agriculture, it's for the purpose of making a profit, by definition. And medical supposedly don't make a profit. So then, therefore, why would you even allow medical in an RR zone? So those are all discussions and conversations and legal things
that I don't think we've had and we should have had before we're sending anything forward.
Well, we have had the one about the processing and the commercial agricultural enterprise. We had that this week.
I am trying.
And that's why, because we double book when, okay.
I'm just trying to figure out why, if I was a medical marijuana grower, why would I want to be a medical marijuana grower when I'm not allowed to make a profit? I wouldn't do it. From a businessman standpoint, why would I go out there and work my fanny off and then say, well, I'm not allowed to make any money at this? I don't know how they make money.
And this is why the direct portion of how many medical marijuana cardholders you have is related to how much black market is coming from those areas, because the profits in the black market.
Well,
but the state
law
is changing to allow 20% to go into the OLCC thing. But either way, you know, we pushed to have some meeting with a quorum, and someone who wasn't going to be here shows up, and we couldn't move the meeting, so we're all here. And you felt like you had this dealt with yesterday when you had this meetings, and I wasn't there, so it's moving forward. But clearly, I wasn't part of that discussion. And to me, it takes a lot of the BS out of this and a lot of the controversy if we go down to two things. Commercial agricultural is not allowed on rural residential property. And if you have a home business on rural residential property, you have to have a permit for it that shows the impact on the neighbors. That is a very simple way of saying if you're going to do business, you have to see the impact on the neighbors. And it doesn't say you can't do business. It says you have to see the impact on the neighbors. And then it doesn't matter what your business is. It keeps it simple. That's just my opinion.
Yeah. Like I said, I can't remember offhand exactly all the words that were used on that, but let me just look real quick and see if the definition's in here. Occupations. Home occupation means a business in conjunction with a residential use, which results in financial remuneration from a product or service and is conducted by at least one resident. Home occupations are clearly incidental and accessory to the residential use. All home occupations shall be conducted in accordance with the following. There's a whole process that goes through it. That's why I said it's all in the email.
I mean,
you can
get them on excessive smell, for example.
But there's a reason why it can't be classified as a home occupation. And like I said, that's all explained in off the top of my head. You know, I can't just tell you. I'd have to walk all the way through that again because it's a very convoluted process. That means, no, we cannot treat it as a home occupation.
Under
the current code or make the code so you can?
Current code, you cannot.
So if the code was amended to allow any commercial business on residential property to require a home occupation permit, it would allow it.
It'd take a lot to get there, but it could be done. But we'd have to deal with the state law that says you treat it as agriculture. And does that now mean all agricultural growers growing tomatoes in your backyard, you bring into the farmer market, do you have to come and get a home occupation permit?
Yep. Yes. They should all be treated the same. If you're doing a business off of your residence, you should go through the same process.
Yeah, I'll re-forward that.
I'm thinking, realistically, a lot of them might want to if they're agriculture, because I think there's the tax, the ag tax, the county can probably give them a break on. So there might be a little bit of an interest. I'm speculating there. I'm probably going too far with that. But just running with that idea, it'd be interesting to see what the reaction would be.
Because they have to apply to that with the assessment.
Yeah, yeah.
Approve it.
Yeah. So there's another connection with the county. Another layer, but it might be a benefit. I mean, I don't know. Actually, I'm talking beyond my depth on that, so I'm going to stop talking.
Just one real quick thing on the home occupation. Again, state says you treat it as agriculture. And similar permitted and outright uses with home occupations. Agriculture, farming and farm use. Basically saying that those are just outright permitted. They don't have to go through a permit process or anything. And that's in the home occupation section right there.
And we're here because we allow agriculture on a rural residential. Not because the state allows it, but because we allow it.
Correct. If our rural residential zone said no agriculture, we wouldn't be having these conversations.
That's the easy solution to me, then. But I know there's a lot of small farmers, and so the way around it is allow them to get a home occupancy permit. And then you have to go through an assessment to make sure your impact on your neighbors. Our whole issue is because people aren't being good neighbors. It's not because we don't want to allow them to grow or we don't want them to be able to get their tomatoes or their corn or anything else and take it to the grower's market. It's, are you being a good neighbor? And what would be the easiest thing to ensure good neighbors? If you're going to have a business on your residence, you have to have an impact on how you impact your neighbors. That would actually mitigate most of what we're dealing with if we did those two things.
Concern I have with the current reading that says if you're disrupting the neighborhood, it's very subjective. How do you prove that? What is the criteria?
You go to the 10 adjacent property owners, and I'll bet you there isn't any of them that would, where you would, if you get one complaint, it stops the whole thing. The permit process stops. One complaint.
Well, I got two complaints this week from about one property, and it's they've clear-cutted, they've stacked the trees in a fire, they're runoff, and all this other kind of stuff. Mm-hmm. That's an impact. I mean, it's one of those things we mitigate it, but we're really going down a line of going after an industry. We don't need to go after an industry. That the simple solution would be is residential is meant for residential. Business is meant for commercial farm use or resource land. And if we, sorry, thought that was silented. If we mix the two, then we have the ability to mitigate it by having a permit required. And anybody else having a business is required to do that. But yet we have this example of why we don't.
Okay, so home occupation, it has to be carried on within a dwelling. State law does not allow you to grow marijuana in your dwelling. Or an accessory building, which means if you're growing outside, if you're not in an accessory building, you couldn't clarify that you couldn't claim it to be a home occupation. So right there, the only thing by calling a home occupation, the only thing you would be able to control would be those that are in a greenhouse, for example. Mm-hmm. Everybody else would be allowed. It has to be accessory to the primary residential use. Home occupation does not include operations which meet all of the following. The person is engaged in making objects. The person is engaged in mail order business. The person offers a service. Business shall not have any employees, so there was most of yours too. The business shall not have a sign. Customers shall not be coming to the residence to conduct business. No materials or commodities shall be delivered to or from the property. Calling a home occupation would get rid of every single marijuana grow in Josephine County. Unless they just keep all that product on site and just...
So nobody can come and get it.
Nobody can come and get it.
And they can't deliver it.
Nope. You can if it's...
then why are they allowed?
Which are such bulk or quantity to as require delivery by a commercial vehicle or trailer exceeding 2.5 tons gross volume weight, not including a licensed parcel service or United States mail. So basically you can have a UPS guy come, but nobody else can come or go. You can't. Right now we know they use U-Hauls to carry the product. No more U-Hauls coming to the property and going...
We need an army to enforce anything we've talked about today. An absolute army. Not a sheriff's department, but I'm talking the National Guard.
Yeah, but
if
look,
we do everyone, they're going out with just stacks of things and trying to check their boxes. Oh, you missed a box. Mm-hmm. You're shut down. Oh, you've got all the boxes, the two of them you can't because this person over here doesn't like that person, which doesn't like... It is so complicated, it's crazy.
Well, that's why you don't call... it's not right in my mind, interpretation of this code, to call it a home occupation. And even if you did call it a home occupation, agriculture is allowed. And then you got state code, which says everywhere you allow agriculture, you shall allow marijuana. It doesn't
right.
match. You
and
can't
they,
do it.
And
that's
they lawyer
why
up
I said the two
defend.
Part that you do. You don't allow agricultural on rural residential that's for commercial use, and you call it a commercial permit on residential property.
If that's what the board wanted us mm-hmm. to do, was to come up with amendments to that effect or direction to that effect, I think that should have been in the order. You know,
that happened yesterday.
No, the original order was back last month.
Okay, but we also said that there was going to be multiple steps involved with the Planning Commission, different things, and that some of it's going to be going to Cannabis Advisory. At some level, when do we weigh in on what's actually brought?
At the end, Lily. Because what happens right now is we bring it to the board and say, is this consistent with your thought process? Is this what you intended for this quarter? The board says, yep, this is it. So now we go through the Planning Commission. They're going to tweak it. They're going to change it. Then they're going to make the recommendations to the board. The board's either going to accept those, change those, tweak it, or add something. Maybe they add that marijuana shall not be treated as a home occupation at that point. But that comes at the end. Would you agree, Lily?
Well, to me, it wastes 3 months. But never mind.
Do we?
We can waste time. It doesn't matter.
Would we be challenged from growers if we did, as Commissioner Morgan says, and make it a home occupation? Would we be challenged from the state side of them saying, no, you can't do that because the state says I am ag and I can do anything else?
I think we would get a lawsuit because it's...
You'd also have to say no ag available. It's two-part. You can't do the one without the other.
So you would say no agriculture at all on residential property. And you can do that. Does that fall under time, place, and manner? Is what we're doing fall under time, place?
It has nothing to do with marijuana. It says no agricultural on rural residential because
period.
Residential is residential. And then now you have a consistency on all things, and now it's treated as something
different. And I think, in theory, sitting here at this table, that is a fantastic idea until you throw that out to the public and you're saying, you're telling me I can't grow anything on my property? This is my property. That's where commissioners and governments get into trouble, is trying to tell people what they can and can't do on private property.
That guy that says he grows lavender, remember that at the meeting? And he was, remember, and he was saying he doesn't grow pot, but he does grow lavender. He would pop.
He grows
it,
medical.
Example. Oh, does he?
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
Well
he's a bad example then.
But
anyway.
That's a good example.
But he does also grow
organic
lavender.
The lavender farm could not exist. The grapes could
yeah,
not exist.
He's who would pop up. I think that's mm-hmm. who you're envisioning, Dan. He will pop up.
Absolutely.
Yeah, and he should, right?
When
and
you,
so
when you, the big controversy has been over and over and over again is that we, as county commissioners, in order to do something for a group of people, we are blanketing everybody in the county and telling them what they can and can't do on private land. And that's where we're
every other business in our county has that restriction except this one. Every other business does have to go through this process.
But
and I'm
throw,
hearing from those
throw,
business
I'm,
people
I'm,
saying,
I,
why
I agree
can't
with
you
what
do
you're
this?
Saying. But if you throw the first statement out that all ag, that agriculture is not allowed on residential without a permit.
Correct.
Then you're going to get a fire.
And they can apply for a home occupancy permit that has an impact on the neighbors.
Well, we'd have to change the home occupancy rules to allow it because currently they couldn't do it. Currently, these rules would say no business.
I moved up here, bought 15 acres, and by golly, I'm going to grow my corn if I want.
You might have a middle ground. I don't know if it's going to get you where you want to go, but just throwing ideas against the wall is to mirror the Jackson County approach, which was upheld by the federal court, by the way. So we do have some precedent to rely upon if you decide to go with what Jackson County has done, which would require a change to the RLDC. But I think DLCD would be okay with it, and just got upheld by the federal court. I mean,
and
you might be able what we can potentially
Blackwell,
do. Yeah.
Both sides of
now,
Hill.
Gendron and his ilk are very opposed to the Jackson County system. I don't know if it's a good one or a bad one. It's not my role anyway. But what I can do is we can give you the particulars of what that involves. And
but they don't allow agriculture on rural
they
residential.
They do. They've got a definitional difference, from what I understand, mm-hmm. between what's what is agriculture anyway.
Yeah,
that's a serious question. Okay. And so, yeah, it does come down to all well, things, the definitions.
So it's been held up, but there's two differences. Jackson County, 5% of their land is rural residential. Josephine, 22% of our land is rural residential. So you're affecting a much larger landscape there. And the other thing is, in Jackson County, if you are a marijuana grower, you can apply for a non-conforming use or conditional use permit. And every single one of them, I think there's 54 that applied so far, all 54 went to the hearings officer and were overturned. What did they get? So, I mean, that's stuff to keep in mind when we're saying, yeah, let's copy Jackson.
Maybe it's not the best model.
You know, Willie, I don't think it is.
Okay.
You know, I just...
And I don't
know,
I'm saying...
See, yeah. How do you have a fair program where we have people that have businesses in their homes and they have to go through a whole thing with their neighbors? Our issue is not marijuana being grown. Our issue isn't tomatoes being grown. Our issue is being bad neighbors. And the only way to mitigate that is make sure there's a home impact study on how your business affects your neighbors in a residential property. And the way to do that is require a home occupancy permit. And the way to make that eligible is to say no agricultural on rural residential, because it's residential, not commercial. And if you want to have a business, you have to apply, and then here's how you can meet those needs. That, to me, is consistent with it not mattering what the topic or the item you're having, that any business in residential has to be a good neighbor. That's what I'm looking for a solution. Is
the
how
only way to join the only way to join cannabis and ensure that cannabis is part of that is subject is to say you can't grow anything on your property
without a permit to grow.
Unless you go get a permit. And people are just going to hit the absolute roof about everybody, 22% of our land mass, having to go get a permit, walk in, and go
to
the permit.
I would counter the voters just said the opposite. They don't want it on it at all. Yeah. That's what the voters just said.
I think you're just creating a bigger black market situation. I think the 3,000-plus growers, I cannot imagine, are going to come in for their home occupation permits.
No. They're not the ones abiding by the rules right now. The 85 rec growers are the ones abiding by the rules right now, not the 2,800 medical growers. That the reality is the bad neighbor complaints are the people not abiding by the rules. And so to say, we'll give you a way, you have to have a permit to do it on rural residential. Now you have a process of trying to find a way to get good neighbors. The only thing we've had to have the rec comply is that their licenses would be pulled. That's supposedly going to come from the state anyhow, with anything over 12 plants going through the state.
Yes.
But the easy solution is, don't treat one market separate than another. All commercial activity on residential property has to go through a process of getting a permit that you see the impact on your neighbors.
We could craft the code that way. Like I said, right now it says that's true with some exceptions, and one of those is agriculture.
Anyhow, I'm trying to find a solution that actually gets to the what's the issue.
Yeah.
But
I think we need to address the deal. Do we want this to go forward today, or do we want to stop, pull the plug on it right now? And how does it affect our timeline?
Well,
I think there's enough question at this table today that.
Well, it's look at the ordinance that's going forward and saying, is that the best solution that's going to meet our needs? Or is there something else that's a better solution that's going to meet our needs? Why would we go all the way through a process with something that's not going to get the end result that you're hoping for? Because my desire is not to waste your time or their time in going through months of work for something that it's not going to actually meet our needs in the end.
Yes, when we discussed it, we felt it would meet the needs. You know, it's basically saying no new marijuana grow unless you're on a big piece of property. And for those that are existing, you're only going to be grandfathered if you can show that you're in compliance with everything and go through certain processes, applying for the non-conforming use determination and having an annual compliance inspection to make sure that you're in compliance.
Okay. Huh. If that's what you guys decided on yesterday, we'll go forward with it.
I do see your concern. And I see your concern all the way with it. But however, I think that I don't even know if none of this is going to be enforceable. Because if we don't get it, if we only get 50 people that comes in and goes through the state system to convert for 2,700 grows that are medical grows that are now going to go with the state OFCC system, if we get 200 of them, I'd be surprised. But, you know, we have 300 of them in there now or whatever, but I'd be really surprised. It won't be anywhere near. So then where does the burden shift to? It shifts to OLCC to enforce it, correct? We're not going to go out there and inspect. Does our sheriff's department have to go out and inspect and say, you have all your licenses and all the other stuff? That burden shifts then to OLCC.
Not really. No, because this was one of the issues we had in the very beginning. OLCC will only inspect if they have an OLCC license. So somebody could say, they don't have a license, and OLCC will be like, that's your job.
No,
that's exactly what they've said to us.
Anything over 12 plants is required to have the OLCC matrix tracking.
So I go out there and I see there's 28 plants on a guy's grow. And I walk up and say, I see you have 28 plants. Do you have your OLCC license? And he goes, no. And you go pull them out. And he's going to go, okay, I'll be getting right on that. I don't think so.
That's exactly what's going on. We've had two press releases in a week of illegal grows that do not have licensing, and the sheriff's office and the state police are enforcing those illegal grows and they're charging them with the appropriate charges. That's exactly what happens. That's what happens in Jackson County. You don't have their permits, you're not a licensed grow, you're over the amount. They've been doing it for 40 years in Josephine County, and they had a whole team called JOMET for Josephine Marijuana Extraction Team. That's what they did. So, I mean, it is, I mean, I don't know. Whatever.
So is that going to continue on if we just do, if we do what they're...
There's always going to be black market.
Well, there always will be. I just don't want to bordering neighbors. You know, when you're right, you know, I'm not getting complaints for the guy who's been back up in the hills forever. I'm getting complaints from Leonard Road that everybody right around me now is a dope grower. And I don't want that. So what do I do to stop that? Do we just ban it from, as you say, just ban it from our R5? What Medford does? What Jackson County does? I mean, they seem pretty cut and dry, don't they? Mm-hmm. See, and yeah, we have more land than they do, but that's, we're going to have more people. That's going to deal with more people than they do. And the reason that those, a lot of the people that are here, is because of Jackson County. Jackson County, this is the way the rules are, and they moved on. So if we drop the same rules, are they going to move on to someplace else? Are they going to move to Douglas County? Are they going to move where else? Wherever there's no rules, that's where they're going to stay. So if we don't adopt any rules at all, guess what? They're going to be here for this growing season, and the next growing season, and the next growing season. I think our people in the 65% has said, do something to do it now. Get it done. I agree with Julian. Let's try to get something done so that January 1, which is the state's coincides with the state, then on January 1, the show is over. What do we have in place on January 1 that says the show is over? This is what you have to do from this point forward. And are we stopping on that process today to have it done by January 1? That's the question I am.
Okay, well, we need to keep going if we're going to meet the April 1st deadline that this all started. So if we can't do it the other way and this is the best route that you guys think will meet that need, we'll just go forward and see how it goes through the hearings process.
What's the legal thing? Does this meet our needs?
Okay. Rural, okay. So we've drifted a little bit from the definitions.
There were definitions at the beginning of it.
There were. But what's been in the packet is what we're really talking about here today. Right.
Do we need to
the extent that I don't, you know, it doesn't, because I'm going to tell you that my perception on this side is the all three of you have a completely different vision of where you want to go. That's my blunt analysis here.
So Tuesday?
I don't perceive that the things that you guys, that the three commissioners each discuss as being what they're interested in seeing the outcome, I don't see you together. That's my perception right now, okay? So
can we schedule this discussion for this on Tuesday?
Well, I can't be present for that. I'm actually going to San Francisco on Tuesday for the Doe's case. We're having the oral argument for the Ninth Circuit. And remember, we talked about that a couple months ago. Totally unrelated to any of this. I won't be present. I will be here Monday and Friday and Thursday. But I think there's... you won't have all three commissioners here Monday. And I don't know they're going to have all three on Tuesday either. From what I understand, Commissioner Hare will be out, I think, until Wednesday. Does that sound right, Wendy? Yes. And so...
How about Thursday?
I'm here Thursday, but...
The problem is that we miss deadlines.
She's planning to...
Yeah, and I have to tell you on a personal note, too, I have two surgeries coming up. After September 18th, I'm supposed to be out 2 weeks, which I'm going to try not to. And then I have one in October as well. So I guess I prefer to be here when we have
Definitely.
A public hearing on it.
Or a discussion about it. So what's realistic? Well...
So
I don't think you have...
In front of the Planning Commission?
Just one in front of the Planning Commission,
okay.
Yeah.
It is. Any deadlines that you're trying to abide ultimately are self-imposed from my perspective. I mean, setting a target date for when you want this out is a great idea and something that you should do. The extent you're trying to meet the deadline of January 1st, I don't see an external requirement to do that.
And if we beat the state's going to kick in on January 1st. That's going to be the big blow.
You're
if
right.
we came in on January 15th, is that going to be an referendum problem?
This is worth thinking about seriously because if people go and get their approval from the state and then the county rule changes thereafter and that's going to be an argument that we're going to have to bat down.
A lot can happen in 2 weeks.
A lot can happen too. I mean, I know... that there is a very serious discussion underway that has probably maybe not found you yet. I think it hasn't. From serious people about doing an initiative on this very matter, and so it could end up being a little bit overcome by events.
You mean a referendum?
No, an initiative. They don't want to run this. They don't want to. I know there's a citizen.
Initiatives.
That means they're going to get the signatures and put an initiative on a vote.
That doesn't go through the board. Yes, that does.
It doesn't
go
through the
board.
Bring it. I'm fine with that.
Let
the voters vote on it.
Yeah.
I'm okay with that.
So
initiative by the people to restrict.
Yes.
So here's some other definitions that aren't in this code.
Oh, I was going to say because my concern is. We're now, if we wait,
mm-hmm.
and then we have our 90 days, and then there's the initiative,
mm-hmm.
you have to realize we're into another growth season.
I don't see us waiting, and I'm not going to wait for all that to happen. But there are definitions in here that aren't included that should be. And that's what a micro-grow is, micro-1, micro-2 level, and tier-1 and tier-2 levels.
We don't use those in our code, in the proposed code, currently or in the proposed draft.
And with the definitions of what they are, though, how does that relate to minimum lot sizes?
There's nothing, the draft doesn't have anything about tier 1, tier 2, or tier 3. And even if it did, we would defer to the state.
Tier 1 and tier 2 are required to be on EFU land. Micro 1 and micro 2 can be on rural residential. And so if we're not including that in this process, in the knowledge of the land that is available and the plants and the canopy size.
We're not proposing that. The proposal is that you can only have a new one if you can meet a 300-foot setback from your neighboring property lines.
Okay.
And if you don't mind, I could take a break, Chairman, because we've been at this an hour and a half.
All right. Why don't we pause until 3:45? It's 3:37 right now. We'll pause for 8 minutes.
Mm-hmm.
So we're back in session at 3:47. We are going to continue our discussion. I realize it's not an opportune thing when not all of us are at the same meeting, and I think that's something that internally we as a board have to figure out how to deal with subject matter that's this important that comes up when not all of us can be there, and especially when it's known ahead of time that not all of us would be there. So as far as scheduling to make sure that we don't rehash something that's already been hashed through as to not duplicate staff's time. So for that, I apologize for... I looked at a packet I thought we were I didn't realize that it was dealt with yesterday because I was at a training yesterday. And I did it successfully. I want to show you. I got a bruise. I successfully put a tourniquet on my arm. Okay, sorry. But for what it's worth, since they had a vote, I will honor the fact that the board made a decision to go forward yesterday, and I will not object to it going forward. I just think that, well, I think there's a lot of work to be done still, and we'll see how that goes. With that being said, we still have the rural road numbering ordinance to go over.
Commissioner, do we agree that the definitions should just go as a tag along to the pending, the proposed rules that were that will go on August 28th?
I'm okay with that. So there, I don't want to go through a process for definitions alone.
Yeah.
So yes.
Oh, that's separate definitions.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, I just want to make sure we got action.
We'll wrap those in.
That's actually a pretty reasonable solution to that.
That'll work out.
Okay, the rural road numbering ordinance, my understanding was we wanted to move pretty quick. One of the reassigned road numbers, and by statute we're supposed to have something that gives us that ability to assign those, and we don't have anything. So what we have is about a paragraph or so that's typed on an old typewriter, kind of a policy of how to assign the numbers, but we don't have an ordinance. This one we've discussed, I think, a couple of times. And this is one that we wanted to, the board went through, and then we wanted to move through legal pretty quick if we could, because it's a concern to us when it comes to marijuana grows, for example. What triggered this, what brought this to my attention that we didn't have it, was the fact that the state was saying your maximum canopy size would be 40,000 square feet unless your county allowed a larger one, which we did not. So then the state went in and changed the rules to say, okay, you get that space per address. So then we had people coming in to get multiple addresses on a property.
On a
tax lot. Yep, and we had no way to say no because we don't have code. So this was one that we've been trying to push forward so we can get a grasp on that. The other thing we have, which we've talked about, is the fact that you'll get a property where they'll want this building over here to be number 9, this one number 3, and this one number 6. And we're like, no, it's got to be in order. We have no ability to tell them that they have to be in order. I mean, obviously, for emergency purposes, we want them in order, but we just don't have a code to that effect. We do have a code that addresses naming roads, but it doesn't address the numbering. This purely addresses the numbering.
I didn't even think we had one for naming.
It's in the RLDC.
For naming?
Yeah, so what it says is anytime, whenever you create a split mm-hmm. or a division, you have to have if there's a road involved, you have to have a road associated in there and their standards, and then there's a, I'll have to show you.
Yeah, because I thought we had looked that up before and that we didn't find anything actually in the code, that maybe it was a policy kind of thing?
No, it's actually in there.
Okay. Because that was kind of our question, was shouldn't we be doing the road numbering and naming at the same time?
Yeah, I do remember that, and I did talk to staff about it, and they pointed out where it's at in the code.
Oh, okay. Because I thought it was your staff who couldn't find it before you were here.
So anyways, this one, like I said, was pretty important to us to move forward. This one does not go through the Plan Commission. Just so you know, the unsafe structures, rural road numbering ordinance would not go through the RPC, is my understanding. Of course, legal can correct me if I'm wrong. The only time you have to go through the RPC is when it's affecting the Rural Land Development Code. So these are just parts of the overall county code. They're not part of the RLDC, so they do not have to go through the RPC, if that makes sense. Just the board, just the process of the first, second reading, and then 90-day effective.
It says specifies ORS 215-110, 1-I specifies a planning commission may. That doesn't mean they shall, right?
Right.
I think we were asking for maybe a little more time to review this one.
Yeah.
And it's also going to need a first reading. I mean, it's going to need...
Absolutely.
Yeah.
So
it's not really ready for...
Yeah, and that's why the board, again, said
August
legal, finish cleaning it up and get it going for that first reading. And this one, my understanding, was a higher priority.
But this one also would have to have a notice. Yeah. You're saying if it's not land use?
Yeah, they still need to go through that notification, notice, the notifying period, the first reading, the 13-day, the second notice, the second reading, and then the 90-day effective date, right?
Yeah, so this says August 23rd for the first reading.
That's because when I was writing it, because at that time, the directive was to send it forward. Get this
done. You see the last paragraph?
So that was me picking the dates of, okay, when will that go? If it goes according to plan, but then...
We have time because...
Since it needs to be done right now.
Yeah,
for the 10 days.
Yeah.
So, my concern when I first saw it was about that naming, because that had come up. I had a question come in from James, I think, about that. And so if that is already in there, that's kind of interesting.
Well, it's odd, too. You go down Interville, and you go to the right, you get Honeyland. You go to the left, you got a different name. And you go down Redwood Avenue, you go to the left, you got Hubbard. You go to the right, you got Durnell, and vice versa. It's like, how is our naming?
Some of them, they turn into a different road, Plum Tree and Pine Crest.
Well,
you're on a different road.
Yes. And Plum Tree.
Yeah.
What happens with that, too, is you got to remember the developer, the guy splitting the land, names it. Mm. Our goal is to make sure they're not similar. We don't want an Apple Drive and an Apples Drive, you know?
Yeah.
So that's where we get involved with that.
Pinecrest started from this way and Plum Tree started from that way. They didn't meet.
Different developers
and
started
then they finally punched it all the way through. Another one is Pinion. It stops on both ends. It hasn't been joined yet, but it will be.
But let's name it something else in the middle just
right,
for the fun of it.
Let's take a pine cone.
I used to live on Penn.
Is this modeled after somebody else?
Yes.
Is this
come
from somewhere?
Yep.
You're using the 1.833 numbers per lineal foot.
Yeah, don't quote me on this, but I think it was Douglas was the one that we modeled it after. It was a long time ago, but
want to make sure it's something similar that we're not defaulting back to a national code like we do on
some of
the other things.
So this was, it was difficult to find one to copy because some places are real simple. It's like part of an RLDC. Some are where it's tied with road naming.
Yes.
So we were trying to find one that was just the numbering, and I think this was Douglas. And then we sat down with GIS and said, okay, does this make sense for our cone? Let's look at all the road numbering examples we have out there. So we looked at to make sure that this was consistent with what was also happening out there.
Would it be better to update the naming one and add the numbers to the naming one so they're incorporated in the same thing?
Well, it's not specifically called road naming. I'm trying to find it right now. It's under a different part of the code.
Because I know in certain areas, I mean, at least general, on the east side of the road is odds and on the west side is evens and on the north side is evens and odds on the south or vice versa, you know, kind of thing.
Yeah.
So those standards are already in place in a system. I don't want us to be creating something that's counter that. But
that's what's happening, but that's not in a code anywhere. That's why this helps with that.
But where did it come from? Is it a state law? Is it a standard somewhere else? Because we didn't invent it.
So we've taken a look at the state roads manual because in that roads manual, I think I maybe even told you about that roads manual. You're asking me about something.
Street plugs.
And the roads manual uses as their sample ordinance the one from Marion County. But that is with road naming and numbering at the same time. And it's a good one. So I think we were going to try to look at this one and see, okay, what did they have in here that ours doesn't? I mean, obviously, if we already have a road naming one, we wouldn't need that.
Well, our road naming one is slid into another section in the code. I would agree.
Like adopted when the code was adopted.
Yeah, as part of another section. I mean, I can't even find it right here. You know? So obviously, it's really nice if it'd be nice and clear.
Yeah.
It's in with our subdivision and replats. basically when you're laying out your roads, where it's addressed in this code, when you're laying them out, that's where the name is. But again, then nothing happens with the number, and that was just...
Well, I just want consistency, not getting... You're not going to get it, because it depends on which way you're going on Azalea Drive. If the odds are on the right and Newbins are on the left, and you turn around the other, now it's the other way around. And if you say, well, okay, if it goes north-south, it's this way and that way, but then if it turns east-west, now it's that way and this way, it's confusing. I just, you know, I very rarely miss it. I've had to go look at addresses in my business for years. And if I'm a 19540, I'm 19 miles out. I'm 19 and a half miles out through 38. I can relax until I get to about...
And it used to be miles. That way on 199, but they got 2 miles off at one point. So
because they took some curves out.
Yeah, as they've got further out, they're about 2 miles. So the address is about 2 off of the mile marker as you get out there.
But at least it's, you know, we're not going to change any of that, but like... Yeah, I just think we need to have
so,
it. So
I'm willing to endorse sending this to legal to have legal bring it back to us before we go forward.
Yeah, I have to move forward.
My suggestion on prioritization, certainly open to comment, but I mean, so we've got the nuisance cases, I mean, that's pretty high up there in terms of what we need to do. We've certainly got the marijuana ordinances here. We've got the record that we need to produce for... You know, at least one LUBA appeal, Sunny Valley Sun and Gravel. And we've got the building structure, the unsafe ordinance, you know, and I've said that's. And so, and of course, we've got 27 departments and commissioners also sending us stuff. And so, my suggestion, and the code is, of course, the top. We only deal in top priorities. That's our motto.
Yeah. Right.
So, in terms of what.
Where does this one fall?
Yeah.
I don't think this is something that needs to be done day after tomorrow. I'm more interested in spending your time on the subject we talked about earlier, okay. Namely that I think the cannabis thing needs to be number one. If we're going to try to stay with the state drop-off date, I don't even know if we're going to get there, but I'd like to give it a sporting good try. Okay. This one here is not...
If the state standard already has something that's suggesting Marion County, I think that should be the guideline until we get something figured out. There's already a state standard, but...
Had I given you Marion County one? I already sent it.
All right. Okay.
Or maybe you did. I didn't see it.
No, I didn't. I don't know.
Okay. I mean, we'll get it done. We'll get it done.
Yeah,
we'll
I mean, it's you know, I don't want to be... Yeah. Talking about this next year at this time, going what happened to the numbering system.
Yeah.
I mean, it's not like we're going to stop numbering.
So we're down to under an hour to get the next 4 things done.
And we shall.
Next up is public health department status, followed by matters from commissioners, followed by executive session.
Okay, so yeah, after you and I talked, and I was like, so do you need anything from legal on some aspect of whatever's occurring in public health? I thought, well, maybe we should just find out. What, if anything, let's check in on that. I wanted to check in, basically, on if you need anything from legal, if the board as a general needs anything from legal regarding whatever is occurring in public health.
Okay, so we as a full board met last week, and there was a recommendation. We had, JJ was out, but Arthur and Cheryl and I met. We had met with JJ the week before, so his stuff was contributed towards it. We made some recommendations of some changes in some kind of a immediate to be done by October 1st and to be aiming for January 1st. And where that stood was the immediate stuff that we're looking at was moving the ACO's supervision under the sheriff's office. And also, and there's a meeting on Friday that you are asked to be at. At 1:00.
Got it.
So, yes, that is an ask we would have of you to be there.
Okay.
The other pieces we were advising to move the community health workers that are grant positions that work in the schools and the tobacco prevention specialist under Sean Martinez and the prevention programming that is housed at the Juvenile Justice Center. That is not something that we needed any assistance with from legal. There's no changes in contracts, no changes in anything other than just moving supervision to another department.
Okay.
The next phase is where we were looking at taking clinical and potentially having an RFP to see if that can be provided in the community versus with us. And we would remain with some items that we have to legally keep. And each day there's different ones that Cheryl's been investigating and following through and who does what and all this kind of stuff. We had asked that some RFPs be looked at from around the state of ones that have already been there, and I was told that Leah is looking at those. Columbia County, Douglas County, some other ones that have maybe done some things already.
Okay.
So we don't want to have to reinvent the wheel for the RFP, but we also want to make sure the RFP is all-encompassing of the aspects of what we find with public health is not everything is done every day. There are things that come up rarely. And so making sure that those items are not dropped in the process so that we see how encompassing all of the things that are provided, that if it stays in-house or it goes in an RFP, that we've made sure to cover, and which portions we partner with in different ways. And so that's kind of where we're at, and we were hoping to have something in place. We need that RFP drafted so we know how to go forward, and we're still kind of looking at each of the positions, if that's a good summary.
Good summary.
I got a hold of the county council in Douglas County. They have contracted out everything except for the public health administrator, and that's a 1.25 FTE. I guess it's a doctor that comes in once a week to administer the contracts, and if there's any emergency, like quarantine stuff, things that a public health official has to do. But everything else has been contracted out.
And we're not looking at going at that level.
Okay. And Columbia.
Do you want me to email you the spreadsheets of what we were looking at?
Yes, please. And Columbia County is looking at doing an RFP, and they are looking at having services start under that RFP on January 1st. And so we were going to kind of work together on that. So I guess I just needed to know, or was curious, what do I need to do, and who am I doing it for, and what are the timelines? And I mean, like, which employees, that type of thing. I don't know what I'm doing.
Okay, so
I'm just kind of,
that's kind of
I have some spreadsheets that I can email you, but we probably would be a good idea for the three of us, or just you guys if you don't need me there.
I've been sending a few things this week because I've been interviewing the different people over there and talked to the state several times about who does what responsibilities we need to keep, because it seems to be the idea of the board that you want to keep a public health department but not provide clinical service. You still want to have that department within the county, so long as it's not a drain on the county, apparently. And the way we have worked to structure it, apparently, as of January 1st, if that's the goal that we could meet, that it no longer would be requiring general fund support, because there are certain departments that make enough money that would support the department. I know that there are some, like Douglas County and some of them, that are contracting out a lot of these things, but when you start looking at what the statutes require, when you contract out some of those things, the oversight necessary, I think, would be pretty intense by Douglas County having an administrator overseeing some of those things. And so in keeping the reporting and the investigation, which is what the state says we need to do, keep those, we can reduce our staff to mostly oversight, reporting, and administrative types of positions. This week I have been sending out emails with information, and you've included on that, because I want you to have the information to include in an RFP. For instance, with the communicable disease person, the discussions we were having with the board last week we were talking about splitting it so that the investigation and the reporting of communicable diseases would remain in the department. Well, it's already been done. They've been doing it that way for years. So there's nothing we need to do there. The only thing is that they're concerned about some of the, I forgot the term now. Anyway, when you have incidents such as outbreaks.
Mm-hmm. Surge.
Pardon?
Surge.
A surge.
A surge. Thank you for the word, surge, yes. When you have a surge, So it might be an epidemic, or it might be a pandemic, or it might just be a large outbreak or a sudden outbreak of something, when you would need to call upon the community. And I know we already have some kinds of informal, or I think there are some formal agreements with the emergency community as far as those things, but when public health, because we don't have to have a nurse that is managing this program within the department, so we could have some kind of public health worker that would do that investigation and reporting.
Okay.
But we would have to have some kind of agreement, I think, in the announcement, so that the winning party, whoever that organization might be, would be the first that we would call upon to respond, because they would have nurses to respond.
Okay.
But that's about the only thing we have to address in their own communicable disease, because what the process as it happens now is typically when someone has a disease, it's because they don't feel well. You know, they show up at the hospital, they show up at an urgent care, they show up at their doctor's office or a clinic. What happens is that there are certain time frames in which those diseases have to be reported. Samples go to the labs have to report, and then, of course, they have to report to our person in our health department, who then enters it in the ARPIA system. And they have to do the investigation in where they get it, you know, who are they exposed and all that kind of thing. But it does not have to be a nurse.
Okay, so
those are the kinds of things I'm going to be forwarding to you so that you can,
okay,
can include them. And I kind of went through kind of a long explanation there, but that's the kind of things I'm going to be forwarding to you. And I think I've done two or three this week already, for you to be able to use when you're evaluating what is necessary to put in that RFP.
Okay, so we're looking at having things start on January 1st, and so maybe we could...
Does that sound right?
That was our aim, if we can. If we can't, to minimally have the plan in place that we're moving towards, because we need to get the RFP as soon as possible, that we can get it out there if we can try to get this going by January 1st.
Okay.
The other question is, we have subcontracts under some of the state contracts, and I haven't been sure whether I should renew those on a month-to-month or renew those through December 30th or what to do on those.
May I?
Yep.
Okay. The RFP, from what I recall, is that typically when you put the RFPs out, they're usually open for like 30 to 45 days. Mm-hmm. Being it would mostly be local, maybe 30 to 45 would be adequate. If you put them out for that and then the responses come in, my guess is we'll probably have two or three respondents based on what we have in the community. Somebody's going to have to evaluate those, and they're probably going to be pretty in-depth.
Mm-hmm.
So you might want to allow yourself time to have a committee to review those. So you're already looking at close to 60 days at least.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Then if you're going to make some changes, I think the union notification is, 90 days?
Mm-hmm.
So my thought is you're probably going to want to have that RFP out within the next probably month at the latest, and you're still going to be lucky if you get it done by the first, by, you know, getting all that, when you start doing your timeline. So you can be pretty well on your way, I would say, probably in October, but still you're going to have allow time for the union compliance, you know, for notices to employees, because it looks like we're going to have about half
so
the number.
So we'll be transferring some employees,
mm-hmm,
too.
We'll be transferring some, probably, but we can't guarantee that.
Mm-hmm.
But it looks like the department will be much smaller than what it is now, and we would hope that they would transfer the employees, particularly in the WIC program. The WIC program... It takes a very special kind of individual to do that kind of work,
mm-hmm,
and they have to be certified in various areas as far as, you know, infant feeding and new child nutrition and breastfeeding and lactation and, you know, all those things, mm-hmm, that they have to get their certifications. So you can't just readily hire somebody off the street that has those. And in Josephine County, we're the only ones that have those. So, you know, we would hope that that would happen. So we have... Right now there's 5 in there, and we're going to hopefully have another one come in, but we had one quit last week.
Okay. So, for example, we had a contract for all care to provide civil services.
Mm-hmm.
I believe that was going to the end of the fiscal year. So do
should be July.
So do I renew that one? Do I do that month to month? Do I just...
Do we need to do it? You said it expired in July?
I think it did. And I think we just got the contract from the state. I'm not sure what the status is on all those.
We'll have to look at all of that. That's
okay.
That's stuff we're going to have to...
You know, my recommendation is
being
that...
bring them all back to you individually.
Yeah, being that
just
the timeline
case by case
is what it is, and we're shooting for January 1st. I mean, depending on what the contract, you know, what terms of cancellation, what we would have to do to cancel, how much notice and how long, and how, you know, and whether we have to buy out of them or whatever, but you need to look at them. But I would think that if we had them, you know, for till the first of the year, because that's our goal.
Yeah.
With perhaps an understanding that we could continue after that, but
yeah.
And the other piece is, I mean, we, after the feedback we got from staff, was the RFP to encompass all of the stuff as one unit, not piecemealing out to different things. So
yeah, it's going to be all the clinical, all the home visiting nurses, all the WIC, all of that together.
Okay. All right.
You didn't get a chart, did you, yet?
I'm emailing it right now.
Oh, you're emailing our chart now. Okay.
Okay, I'll get another chart. Sure.
Yeah.
Okay. Thanks. Okay.
And that way you can see what the chart looks like as of 10-1 and as of 1-1. Mm-hmm.
All right, yeah. I'll
I lost my P drive.
Okay.
It was there earlier, just so you know. All right. Okay. The other question that came up that legal might have some weigh in on it is vital records. Did you see my response?
The vital record? No, I didn't see it.
Okay, so we are not allowed to keep vital records down there because of the passports in clerk's office. We're one of the few places that offer passports easily accessible in Southern Oregon.
Okay.
And so that's why vital records moved out of there initially. So it doesn't have to stay with public health. It seemed to be a good fit because of death records and such like that, so them documenting death certificates from medical facilities and such. It pays for itself.
Mm-hmm.
And so it's just kind of an anomaly. We thought next best fit outside of clerk, public health, because of the death records. So that's how it ended up at public health.
Okay.
So
not a problem.
If it needs to find another home, we will have to do that, but it seems to still kind of be a good fit since it can't go to clerk where other counties sometimes have that.
It doesn't have to go. That was just something that I was suggesting, that if you were talking about trying to make some adjustments in personnel as to where you would might want to make them, that would have been one. It's not necessary.
Okay.
Okay. That'll get me going. That'll get me going.
Mm-hmm. Get you started, huh?
Yeah. Okay.
What I found helpful is I use that chart a lot, and you can just kind of take the blocks and kind of, that's not what I'm doing. So I'm working with the blocks down there.
It would also be helpful to know which, under the state contract, which service elements will be going out, because that'll be the scope of work for the RFP. If that makes sense.
So take a look at the chart I just emailed you and see if it answers that question.
Okay.
Or
yeah.
Not.
I'll do that.
Yeah, look at that. And because we just signed a contract for the biennium for the public health support,
mm-hmm.
and that was $1 million something. Mm-hmm. And we have several that are year contracts that we were a little slow in getting them signed, so that they just go through the end of the year. So
okay, I'll take a look at that, and then I'll get a hold of you.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Thanks.
The face page that comes before all the stuff that goes. Do you know who fixes the face page for edits? This agenda item for that usually goes to the meeting.
Oh, we do.
Okay, who fixes it?
We just edit that Terry's not here anymore. We have Wendy and Ricky that we sent an email out saying send all that stuff to them. So the emails, instead of it saying Terry still.
Right.
Just, it's an old form on you.
Oh, that's Wendy that does that. Sends out the form.
I think somebody probably just used an old form, because the new one does have Ricky's name on it.
Okay. So I'm just bringing up that somehow this form.
Okay. Thank you. Okay. We'll keep an eye out for it.
Cool. It's actually JJ's fault. It's his one.
Mm-hmm.
So just saying.
When
cool.
He sends that out.
Any other questions that you guys have?
Well, yeah, just want to clear up. So it seems like everyone's on the same wavelength. So does that sound right, Commissioner DeYoung? Are you on the same wavelength with the rest of it? Okay.
Yes.
Okay. Okay. So those here gathered, we've all...
So I had met with JJ. I had met with JJ and Arthur and Cheryl, and we came forward with a proposal to the full board.
Okay.
The full board said we can move forward.
Okay.
But there's some pieces in there that we're still working on. One of those pieces is in the transferring of the supervision of the ACOs.
Mm.
And that's going to be a discussion this weekend, this Friday, with Cheryl, Sheriff Daniel,
JJ, Arthur, no, Arthur won't be there, but he'll have a representative there, you and I. And hopefully finalizing a couple of things with that. The move over at Juvenile is actually going upstairs to the second floor of Juvenile Justice. It's not going to be down in Juvenile, or in the family court. It's upstairs. It's not actually in Juvenile Justice. They have their separate space upstairs. And Facilities was asked to get that cleared. So that's actually ready whenever we decide to make that move. If there's any other pieces, that one is, we just have to decide what date we're doing that by. And
if I may suggest, I think that probably it should be right like on the 1st of September if we could.
Okay.
That way it's kind of gives a good break date. And then we have October 1st for the ACOs. Mm-hmm. Kind of.
Okay.
I think that's kind of manageable for people.
What about environmental health?
It's staying in public health.
Okay.
Yeah, because we have, in our agreement with the state, we have 3 FTEs. 2.2 FTEs have to be on the public health issues.
Okay.
So by trying to relocate them to another department would, I think, be a problem there.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right.
We are going to try to address some of those issues through management changes.
Yes. In fact, I'm meeting with Julie tomorrow.
Okay. So what we're asking is that the complaints kind of go through one source. So the public is one source, and that's through Julie's department. Julie makes the referrals over.
Okay.
And they don't get to say we're not going to investigate those.
Okay.
They will be investigating. Mm. And that's the change.
Okay.
There may be a piece of making sure that we have all the places in for the. I don't know. Right now, there's just.
Okay.
Sure.
For the long and short of it, we're going to try to see if management changes will make the situation better, and if it doesn't, we'll revisit it.
We still have the wind machine running around trying to catch the pieces.
Yeah.
We're working on it.
Okay.
And I brought these over. This has to do with the communicable disease department. These are, the top page is what the clinicians have to report.
I'll give them both to you instead.
That's what I forgot. I didn't have an extra copy for Commissioner Hare. Sorry. But the top one, the one that says clinicians, that is what our communicable disease person investigates and reports. The one on the back is what the pharmacy, the laboratories, and they have to report because the samples are sent to them, and then the reporting goes back to cattle. So,
okay, we'll follow.
So it's really very straightforward.
Okay.
Very.
And hopefully, we will not have the plague. I'm just saying, since it's on the list.
You know, I didn't like the Ebola either.
Yeah. Just saying.
Okay.
Awesome. Okay. So next up, any matters from commissioners? I will bypass that too. So at this time, we will be going into executive session. Item 7A is land use enforcement of 1500 Russell Road, pursuant to ORS 192-6602-H. Item 7B is a review of collective bargaining labor contract agreements for Federation of Oregon Parole and Probation Officers, FOPO, and Sheriff's Association, pursuant to ORS 192-6602-H. And it's 4:21, and we'll be in executive session. We will be coming back out before 5 o'clock to give an update.